Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Two huge forces in American politics have been facing off for the last week in Wisconsin. Americans, tired of big government and big deficits, have found a hero in Republican Governor Scott Walker, with his big axe approach to budgets and unions and the American labor movement, and a lot of Americans worried about the economic balance of power in this country have found a time and place to make a stand. This hour on Point, Wisconsin. You can join the conversation. How do you see the stakes there? Who are you cheering? And what's the way forward? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. We will hear voices on both sides of this clash today, among them former Wisconsin Governor and Secretary of Health and Human Services, Tommy Thompson, and labor economist Harley Shaken. But let's start with the facts. Jason Stein is Capitol reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us from Madison. Jason, thanks very much for being with us.
Hello, Tom. Good to be with you.
So is there any sign of a break in this standoff?
No. At the moment, neither side is blinking. Obviously, public labor unions, have said that they are willing to make concessions on their pension and health benefits to the financial level sought by the governor. But the governor has said that that alone wouldn't be enough, that he also wants them to, wants to repeal most collective bargaining rights for public employees, and that is something that the unions have said they're simply unwilling to do.
Is there any sign of the Democrats who have fled to deny a quorum to the governor Republicans coming back into the state, back to Madison?
No, the Democrats who are in Illinois have said that they'd be willing to come back for a deal of the sort that the unions are proposing. In other words, the unions keep their collective bargaining rights, but they give up the financial concessions. But the Walker administration has said that's a no-go.
Remind us of the concessions that the union has said it is willing to make on pensions and health care.
Right. So the union has said they're willing to start contributing 50% of their pension contributions, start making those payments, and also to start paying 12% of their health benefits.
And on the collective bargaining side, what is it exactly that the governor wants to take away?
A number of things. He said that he wants to make the state essentially a right-to-work state for public workers. In other words, you would not have to pay union dues if you did not want to do that, if you were a state worker. Unions would have to vote every year to remain a union. Number of the government could no longer collect union dues on behalf of the union. They'd have to go to their members individually and ask them to, write a check to the union for their union dues, a number of things like that.
You have at least one house coming back into session today at the State House there in Madison. Can they, will they do anything on this standoff?
There'll be both houses will come into session today. The State Assembly will come in and is expected to take up the budget repair bill that contains all these provisions. The State Senate is also expected to come in. Now, they cannot take up that budget repair bill because, again, they need 20 members present to vote on a budget bill or a financial bill. And one of, Republicans only have 19 members, so they'd need one Democrat present to be able to vote on that bill. But they're trying to take up other pieces of legislation, in an attempt to put pressure on the Democrats to come back to Wisconsin and back to the state Senate.
The governor, we read, is threatening now another, 1,500, 2,000 layoffs of public employees if an agreement isn't worked out this week. Is that right? And what's the leverage in that?
Right. So the governor has said, he said early this morning on a Madison TV show, mm-hmm. he said that the state would send out layoff notices to workers next week if they aren't able to reach a budget deal. And just so you know, I'm here in the Capitol press room between the Senate and Assembly, so you may be able to hear drumming, you may be able to hear the hum of reporters coming in and out as we're already.
No, that's no problem.
A busy day.
Is that enough leverage to get Democrats back in the state, that threat of more layoffs?
That's a good question. I mean, you know, both sides have some leverage on each other. I mean, you know, Governor Walker wants to do as part of this budget repair bill a refinancing of state debt that would free up $165 million in this fiscal year. And if the Democrats stay out of the state until Saturday, the window closes on that. They'd be no longer able to meet the deadlines to do that refinancing, and then they'd have to look elsewhere for cuts. But at the same time, you know, the places where they would look for cuts, like cutting public employees or cutting state health programs for the poor, are places where Democrats, by and large, aren't going to want them to look. So, you know, there's not really a situation here where either side is able to come out with unscathed, I guess you might say, politically.
Jason, remind us, the governor has been so publicly adamant, so absolutely adamant to this point. Remind us of the politics behind him. He just became governor. The path that brought him to this moment that might explain his very, very apparently firm position.
Well, I think the thing that you have to understand about the governor is up until a couple months ago, he was the executive of the state's largest county, Milwaukee County. That's an elected position. And there he had a series of running budget battles with unions, county unions, in which he sought a number of concessions, and some of which he got, a lot of which he didn't get. And so what he's saying right now is he's saying, I want to give local officials the ability to do things without having to negotiate with unions that I didn't have as a local official. I want to give them the tools that I didn't have. And what unions are saying is you want to give local officials tools that they shouldn't have. So that's really the heart of the conflict and the standoff right now.
Jason, critics are saying that the governor helped create the budget crisis by tax cuts that he has pushed since coming into office. What about that?
There's a little bit of confusion there. I've written about that and blogged about that for the Journal Sentinel. I mean, there's two things going on here. The state has a shortfall of $137 million in this fiscal year that ends June 30th, and then it has a more than $3 billion shortfall in the two-year budget that begins on July 1st. Now, all the governor and the legislature have passed more than $100 million in tax cuts since he took office in January. But all of those tax cuts take effect in the next budget. So in other words, they're not adding to the budget shortfall that this bill right now is trying to address in the current fiscal year. But they obviously do add to the budget problems for the state in the next 2 years. So people have sort of confused those two issues, which admittedly is easy to do if you're not following this very closely.
And Jason, finally, we've all seen the incredible images of many, many thousands of people swarming over the Capitol. How is that now? And does it look as though that public display of opposition is likely to go on as long as the standoff goes on?
Well, I mean, so far, you know, the protesters have shown, pretty firm commitment to what they're doing. I mean, there's certainly more people here today again. The crowds of yesterday, there were certainly many thousands of people here in spite of pretty wintry weather. You know, last week the big crowds were helped by what was for Wisconsin pretty decent weather for February. This week it's not been so terrific, but, you're still having what by any normal standards is an exceptionally sized, demonstration here at the Capitol. So far, protesters have remained, very committed to this.
Jason Stein with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in Madison. Thank you so much, Jason, for joining us.
Hey, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
Joining me now from Berkeley, California, is Harley Shaken, professor of labor and the global economy at the University of California, Berkeley. He was a finalist, reportedly, for labor secretary under President Obama. He's been watching the Wisconsin story closely. Harley Shaken, thank you very much for joining us. What do you see unfolding in Wisconsin?
Well, Tom, it's good to be here. It is, in fact, a watershed moment. It's rapidly becoming union-busting, masquerading as budget-cutting. As Jason pointed out, the unions have agreed to all the concessions the governor asked for, but he wants to eliminate collective bargaining and weaken unions so thoroughly they'd cease to effectively represent workers in the workplace. In effect, he's not asking for shared sacrifice here. From the union's point of view, they are the sacrifice. And I think what's so significant about this is it goes well beyond public workers. It goes well beyond the labor movement.
How so?
It could be transformative for American society.
What do you mean?
Well, unions, we sometimes forget, are the folks that brought us the weekend, so many of our workplace benefits. They also fueled the creation of the middle class. If workers in the public sector take this kind of a hit, they now are over half of the entire labor movement in the U.S. All of labor is weakened, but then workers in the private sector are going to feel this, whether they're in unions or not. There'll be a cold wind blowing out of Wisconsin that pushes down on everyone's benefits, on everyone's wages. The fiscal crisis is real. There's no doubt about it. But the remedy here far exceeds what needs to be done and goes in a profoundly, I think, inappropriate and conflictive direction.
Harley, we've just got half a minute before the break, but what do you say to members of the middle class who say, wait a minute, in the private sector, we can't bear the burden of these public sector wage and benefit packages anymore? Give us a break. What about that perspective?
Statistically, it's untrue. Public sector workers earn less than in the private sector. Wages and benefits combined in Wisconsin, it's about 5% less. And there are sacrifices that are going to be made. There is a necessity for shared sacrifice, but this goes well beyond it and challenges a basic democratic right with strong economic and political repercussions.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Wisconsin, ground zero now in the showdown over labor rights and budget woes. Harley Shaken has joined us from Berkeley, California, big labor economist there. And right now from Madison, Wisconsin, we're joined by the former Republican governor of that state. Hero, we're told, to the current governor, Scott Walker. Tommy Thompson is with us. He was appointed Secretary of Health and Human Services by President George W. Bush, ran for president as a Republican in the 2008 campaign. Governor, Secretary, Tommy Thompson, thank you very much for being with us.
Well, sir, good luck to you, and thank you very much for having me.
What do you see going on in your state? Scott Walker points to you as a kind of hero and role model. Is this the path you would have taken, Governor?
Oh, I think that that the state is in very serious fiscal problems left over from the previous administration. It's about a $3.6 billion deficit, and the governor is trying to balance the budget without raising taxes and create a atmosphere in this state open for business, and I applaud him in regards to that.
Does he need to take away collective bargaining rights to do that, to accomplish that?
Well, I think, you know, you have to put yourself in his position. He has indicated on many occasions that this is not an effort to bust the union at all. It's one in which he's faced with a dilemma. He says, people want me to negotiate. You can't negotiate when you're $3.6 billion in deficit. And I think that anybody in that situation has got to look around in order to try and find ways to cut the budget and save expenditures and find ways in which you're going to get the state moving again. The state's in dire fiscal trouble, and the governor recognizes that and is putting that message out loud and clear. And that's the message that he has conveyed, and it's the message that I think people should hear.
There's been a proposal to freeze collective bargaining rights, some of them for a couple of years, and then allow them to resume. If it's not an effort to bust the unions, why hasn't the governor picked up that notion?
Well, you'll have to ask the governor that. It's something that's been advanced by, I believe, a Republican state senator.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that it has received anybody else to support it. And I believe the unions have picked it up now. I don't believe you can make those kind of decisions in the absence of other people from the other political party willing to come in and talk about it. And as I understand it, they're still out of the state.
Harley Shaken is with us in California. Harley, join us with Tommy Thompson for a moment here. Governor Thompson, Harley Shaken has said this is a watershed moment where the future of the middle class in this country is on the line. Harley, you hear the governor, Tommy Thompson, former governor, saying it's got to be done.
Well, certainly there is a crisis, and that $3.6 billion deficit needs to be addressed. There's little question about that, but we have to put the crisis in a broader perspective. How did we get here? Was it outrageous salaries for public workers in Wisconsin? No. It was the financial crisis. It's what happened on Wall Street that drove us into this economic ditch that caused revenues to collapse. So it wasn't that the retired school teacher on a $19,000 a year pension is causing our problems. It was billionaires in hedge funds and other exotic financial approaches that caused this collapse. So we clearly have to get out of it. But that can be done working with the unions through collective bargaining. Will there be pain? You bet. But there's a difference between pain and eliminating an institution that's not simply fundamental to any democracy, but that also has enormous economic implications in terms of creating a middle class and in terms of sustaining that long term. So this is a really short-sighted approach that's looking at the wrong thing and avoiding the larger issues that are here.
Tommy Thompson, what about that argument? This crisis was created by billionaire hedge fund guys, not teachers in Madison.
That's a huge leap to say that this little bill and that's put in advance by Governor Walker is going to eliminate the middle class. I mean, that's just arguing in whole cloth. It's not even possible. Secondly, I think that there needs to be discussions and ongoing, but you can't discuss legislation when the other side has abandoned their responsibility and left the state. And so I think that it's better to get everybody back and start to sitting down and try and iron out the problems. The state of Wisconsin is in serious trouble. The state is not alone. My last count indicates that there is 36 out of the 50 states that have huge deficits. 40 out of the 50 have budget problems, but 36 out of 50 have huge fiscal deficits, including Wisconsin. And you're not going to get out of it by wishing it away. You've got to take some dramatic actions, and that's what the governor and is doing with his proposal.
What do you say to union members? Governor, and union leaders who look around and say wages have stagnated and gone down in this country? Unions are the only bulwark against that happening right across the board. Why go at them instead of taking the steps necessary to raise everybody's wages here? Why go at the last bastion of middle class life? Is the argument we hear?
It is not the last bastion of middle class. And I don't think anybody is bashing a union. I certainly am not. And I sincerely believe that you have to start someplace. The state of Wisconsin right now has got a deficit over the next 5 months. And if you do not come back and pass the bill by Friday night, the refinancing is going to eliminate the possibility of $160 million coming into the state of Wisconsin to help bridge that deficit. So if they don't pass that bill by Friday night, a $160 million partial solution to this problem is going to be washed away, and that means it's going to have to be probably layoffs, and I don't want to see layoffs in the state employees.
What is a union if it
doesn't be able to solve it?
What is a union if it doesn't have collective bargaining rights? I mean, what is a union in that case? You say you don't want to see them busted, but what's a union without that?
Well, the union's still going to have collective bargaining rights. There's nothing. Nobody says that they're not. They're going to be able to. Collectively bargain over wages, and that's part of it. That's part of being a union, is collectively bargaining for your income and wages. It's not what they had before, but it certainly is not. The unions still have not been done away with. I'm hoping that they're going to be able to solve this problem.
Governor, let's get one call from just across the border from you there. John in Des Moines, Iowa. You're on with Tommy Thompson.
Hi, Tom. I'll start my conversation with the premise that taxes are the cost of a civilization. And here in Iowa, our newly reelected governor wants to cut state taxes 20%. And this is leading to the same thing that's going on in Wisconsin right now. And I salute Wisconsin and my brothers in solidarity in Wisconsin. Keep up the fight. Today we're going to meet at the State House between 1 and 3 in the afternoon. I urge Iowans to converge on our state capitol to do the same thing they're doing in Wisconsin. You know, at some point, we just have to say, you know, we have to raise taxes. Now, we're one of the lowest taxed countries in the world. And if we want to continue with a middle class, we need to look at the cost of a civilization is only paid by taxes. And I say fairly taxed.
John, let us pick it up right there with Tommy Thompson. Just got him for another minute. Tommy Thompson, what do you say to our caller across the border there in Iowa?
Well, I think, you know, that that is a position that he's taken. I think it's a minority position. I don't even think the Democrats in Iowa are advocating increasing taxes, which the caller just has indicated. I think Americans are taxed way over what they're capable of doing. And we are in an economic downturn, and I think you solve your economic woes by raising taxes. You have to energize the economy, whether it be Iowa or Wisconsin or Washington, D.C. And even the liberals in Washington are not even talking about increasing taxes except for a few. But the vast majority of even the Democrats that have been, in, you know, taxpayers are talking about the fact that they cannot. The economy cannot stand it. So I think universally, or the vast majority of economists and people that know governments know that you can't solve this economic problem by raising taxes anymore.
Governor Tommy Thompson, former Wisconsin governor, former Secretary of Health and Human Services, joining us today from Madison. Thank you very much for being with us, Tommy Thompson.
Good luck to all of you, and thank you for having me.
Harley Shaken, you have to re-energize the economy, and to do that, you've got to cut taxes. And yet we see those thousands and thousands there in Madison. You know, they're standing up for something. Presumably, well, what about the argument that Tommy Thompson makes?
Well, I would take issue with the argument in a number of ways. First, the governor's proposal is, in fact, to limit wage increases to the cost of living. Unions will not be able to collectively bargain in this area unless they want to reduce their wages. Second, if this is such a great idea, why not have it in all states? If that takes place, and there certainly will be a strong movement in that direction if this succeeds in Wisconsin, then you are eliminating the collective bargaining rights for over half of organized labor today. Already we're seeing in Indiana similar moves in the private sector. So this really looks at the destruction of the labor movement as an effective economic and political force. To indicate that has no influence on middle-class wages or a middle-class lifestyle, I think neglects the last 75 years of our history. So we really do have a very strong issue here. Also, the governor mentioned all the other states that are in fiscal crisis. And this, of course, is real. But if we look at some of these states, Massachusetts, Montana, New Mexico, all have collective bargaining. They have a state deficit of less than 10%. Arizona, Nevada, and North Carolina do not have collective bargaining. They have a deficit of over 30%. This small example indicates what got us into this mess is not union demands. Unions are certainly showing that they're willing to sacrifice to get us out of this mess. It's going to be painful and real and necessary. But to indicate that collective bargaining is our problem, I think detracts from looking at the real source of our problem, which was the larger financial collapse, and takes off the table appropriate and also painful measures, such as taxing the very wealthiest to address the immediate crisis that we have.
Let me get a call from Tony in Orlando, Florida. Tony, you're on the air with Harley Shaken.
Hi, how are you?
Okay.
My comment is that, you know, I think it's unfair to have the vast majority of the population support the public sector workers. And, you know, I know there's comments about how much they're paid or not, but frankly, given that they are in a risk-free job as opposed to those of us in the private sector who could lose contracts or get fired or whatever, public sector employees generally get regular pay increases, very low risk, and they get pensions, which are unheard of in the private sector these days. So the ability to adjust those to a more moderate an appropriate level, I think, is entirely appropriate. And I don't think it's fair, as some of the other people have said, to subsidize a quote-unquote middle-class lifestyle for some of the public sector workers makes sense. And I'll also add that I'm a former Wisconsinite who now lives in Florida. And though some of our services are not as robust as those in Wisconsin, I will say I really enjoy paying 0% sales tax and lower property taxes. And frankly, our public sector employees are, and it's effective, of course, but are friendlier than those that, and more responsive than those that I found in Wisconsin.
Tony, I appreciate your call. Harley Shaken, what about that argument? You hear it again and again. Why should we, says Tony, that non-public service employees, bear the burden of their nice benefits that he doesn't have?
Well, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about the benefits that public workers have. Very often the benefits have been historically in lieu of larger pay raises. In Wisconsin, for example, the median wage of firefighters is $33,000 a year. That's not wages that will put you in the French Riviera. The median wage of high school teachers is a little above $45,000 a year. So we're talking about moderate wages, and we're talking in the public sector of more generous benefits right now, given the collapse of benefits in the private sector, but these were often in lieu of wages over many decades. So we're not looking at a group of people that are immune from the crisis. We're looking at our neighbors. We're looking at citizens. We're looking at people who work in hospitals, who fight fires, who are police officers. We're looking at a whole range of people that are sharing the current economic crisis. And the issue is, should they be made to pay a disproportionate share of that, while the very wealthiest who have benefited so handsomely, in fact, in some cases from the financial crisis itself, are largely exempt? The percent of taxes that many of these public workers pay are likely larger than the percent taxes that a hedge fund manager pays, because those taxes are almost always less than 15%, capital gains, not income. That's the kind of area where we should be looking at the fairness issue, not at public workers who perform vital functions and who often and overall are paid less than their counterparts in the private sector when you adjust for education, experience, and other factors like that.
But when job security and pensions have floated away, raced away from so many Americans, can you understand why Tony looks across the fence and say, okay, you know, the pay may not be great, but who else has job security? Who else has a pension these days? His eye isn't going to that rich guy. It's interesting. It's going to that neighbor who's got what he doesn't have now.
You know, I'm very sympathetic to Tony and people like Tony who feel that way. It's awfully hard for ordinary working Americans today, and they're feeling a lot of pain. But that pain isn't going to lessen by taking it out in public workers. In fact, it's going to get worse, because if you press down really hard on public workers, it's not that those at the private sector stay the same. They're going to feel those same pressures throughout the economy. And in fact, here, I think what's so critical is to understand truly the dimension of the problem. 400,000 public workers have been laid off nationally in this crisis. They don't have that job security. They're willing to sacrifice on their benefits, as we've seen in Wisconsin.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Wisconsin Ground Zero in a showdown over labor rights and budget woes. Harley Shaken is with us in Berkeley, California, professor of labor economist there. And we will have another couple of great voices with us in just a second. A little sound from Madison, this is from Sunday, when an estimated 60,000 protesters marched outside the State House there. ABC spoke with one union worker who said Governor Walker has no right to slash union benefits and pensions.
We're going to be working for minimum wage with no benefits, and then everybody will be working for that. We need a strong middle class, and that was built on the backs of unions.
There's the pro-union perspective, but here again on Sunday, Tea Party members joined the protest to support Governor Walker. This Tea Partier told ABC he thinks Wisconsin GOP is in the right and shouldn't cave to the union rallies.
We're not going to negotiate. Why would we negotiate? We won in November. Elections have consequences. It's as simple as that. I can't make it any plainer.
Elections have consequences. And finally, President Obama saying that the governor's effort would hurt more than they would help, an assault on unions, he says here.
Some of what I've heard coming out of Wisconsin, where you're just making it harder for public employees to collectively bargain generally, seems like more of an assault on unions. And I think it's very important for us to understand that public employees, they're our neighbors. They're our friends.
The president on Milwaukee's today's TMJ4, that was last Wednesday. State Senator Robert Wirch joins us right now from across the border. Democratic state senator in Wisconsin. He and 13 other Democratic senators have left the state to deny a quorum to Republicans and the governor on the budget bill. Senator Wirch, thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me on the show.
So this is stretching out. How long are you prepared to stay out of the state to block the vote?
Well, I don't think we have a timeline. Clearly, we have a history of 50 years of negotiations and collective bargaining with government unions, and all of a sudden they want to do away with that in a short period of time, and we simply want to lengthen the process, allow the public to come forth, and we're flexible.
You heard the tape there of a protester, a Tea Partier in Madison over the weekend saying, look, Republicans won the elections in November. Elections have consequences. Let's go. Let's have a vote. Let's do it. What about that perspective?
Well, first of all, I don't think the election is simply a blank check. We're willing to work with this governor. I believe he was elected on fixing the budget, not to break unions. And we have been in daily contact with the other side. We've offered compromises. And let's remember that Tommy Thompson, who I served under, was wildly popular in Wisconsin as a moderate, someone who compromised. And all of a sudden, we have a hard right agenda by the new governor. And, boy, the people are showing up in Madison to say they don't like that. My phones are ringing off the hook back in Madison. Overwhelming people are, a number of people are against it. So, at times we think that this governor is answering to right-wing think tanks instead of listening to the citizens of Wisconsin.
Your Congressman Paul Ryan there said it looks like a Cairo in Madison lately. Harley Shaken says he feels like, something big is opening up here, a watershed not just for Wisconsin but for the whole country. Do you see that?
Well, these are overwhelmingly peaceful protests. Even when the Tea Party people were in town, it's amazing. It's a cross-section of people. It's retirees. It's the people that pick up your garbage. It's the people from the water department. It's teachers. It's university students. I've never seen anything like this in my years in public service.
And what do you say to those Republicans in Wisconsin who voted for this governor and who want these drastic measures to go after the budget deficit?
Well, we've also seen some signs around the Capitol that I voted for Scott Walker, and I'm very sorry. I think that, compromise is good. I think Wisconsin's getting a black eye across the country for not being willing to compromise. The governor says we're open for business. I've talked to businesses, and they say what they need is a educated workforce and not the tax cuts that he's talking about. And we have to work a way out. I believe economic development it can be fostered by a good education system, and we have to do the budget cuts, I think, to protect worker rights and protect our education, and that's good for business.
State Senator Robert Wirch represents the Kenosha District. He's out of the state right now, denying a quorum that might let this all come to a vote. Senator, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me on.
Harley Shaken is with us in California. We'll be joined by get another conservative perspective here in just a moment. First, Mikkel calling from Newton, Massachusetts. Mikkel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm an avid listener.
Wonderful. Welcome. What do you think?
Thanks. So I, first of all, just to make my perspective absolutely clear, I believe that collective action is a democratic right, and I believe that working people, all working people, should be treated like grown-ups, not children. And I have a question that is in response to two opposing viewpoints that have been voiced recently.
Okay.
One from Harley Shaken, saying that that in several states like Massachusetts, where public workers do have collective bargaining rights, the percentage of the deficit is actually lower than in several states where they don't. So clearly, their ability to bargain collectively is not the source of the state's troubles. And juxtaposing that to a comment that came from a man in Florida in maybe about 10 minutes ago.
Yep, in Orlando, Tony,
Tony, saying that why should workers who don't have these benefits and rights that the and job security that the public workers have, why should they support them? So to my mind, when I put those two statements together, that presents a splendid argument for workers who aren't unionized to unionize. I mean, why should they not try to gain for themselves the same kinds of collective bargaining rights that have ameliorated and improved the condition of the lives of public workers?
Mikkel, let us pick that up, if I may, and I thank you for your call. Joining us right now from Washington is Diana Firstgott Roth, senior fellow at the conservative Hudson Institute, contributing editor at RealClearMarkets.com, columnist for The Examiner. Diana Firstgott Roth, you hear our caller's question. Why not more unions, not less, in response to the falling wages and benefits that we've seen around the country?
Well, the percent of private sector workers who choose to belong to unions has fallen steadily, and now it's less than 7% of private sector workers now belong to unions.
So have wages fallen and stagnated. So is that a mistake? Is that a problem?
The fact that people don't want to belong to unions is because they don't feel that unions do a good job for them. Unions take... they take union dues from members, they use it for political contributions, and they tend to drive wages up, drive up unemployment. And you can see in the 2010 census that Americans are moving from union-dominated states to states that are right to work, where you don't have to join a union as a condition of getting a job. So Americans are showing an increased preference not to join unions because unions are correlated with higher unemployment. Just look at the big three auto manufacturers in Detroit, Ford, GM, and contrast those with Toyota, Honda, Mercedes, that didn't have to have these layoffs. But to get back to the question in Wisconsin, we have the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, and they brag how much they contribute to political campaigns. So we had Gerald McKenfee last fall. He said, quote, "We're spending big, and we're damn happy it's big."
Well, why shouldn't they?
It's big, it's their money.
Big money spends very big all over this country. Why shouldn't unions spend in political campaigns?
Well, because these unions are in a... There's no reason that individuals can't contribute, but we have a vicious cycle where the unions are contributing to Democratic politicians, and then they promise to raise worker salaries higher and hire more public sector workers, even though data show that government workers are compensated about 10% more, 10 to 20% more than private sector workers in comparable jobs. And then that starts all over again. And in fact, President Roosevelt, he wrote a letter to Luther Stewart saying that quote, all government employees should realize that the process of collective bargaining, as usually understood, cannot be transplanted into the public sector. It has its distinct and insurmountable limitations when applied to public personnel management.
Diana, first cut Roth, please stand by there. Harley Shaken, what about it? Are we approaching here the showdown on these perspectives? The one, you know, let labor unions go. Americans don't want to join them, Diana first cut Roth says. You just get higher employment that way. And on the other side, we see wages falling in this country. And, I mean, are we at the last stand here on these perspectives, Harley?
Well, I'm not sure it's the last stand, but it's an awfully important stand that will have repercussions far beyond Wisconsin. The irony here is collective bargaining historically has been used and used effectively to resolve disputes like this. And I think Diana is taking this out of any historical context. When unions were at their peak in the United States, the period from the end of the Second World War to roughly the mid-1970s, this was a period of unprecedented economic growth. One out of every three workers in the country was a union member. And this was when the modern middle class was really created. Real incomes more than doubled over this period. So, and in terms of all the stereotypes that are out there, once again, public workers, when you adjust for experience, education, and factors like that, earn less than their counterparts in the private sector, period. There's no dispute about that data. It's only when you don't adjust for that that you get the kind of numbers that Diana's raising. Also, you mentioned, look at the auto industry. Let's look at it for a moment. Let's look at the Ford Motor Company. It's the most profitable automaker in the world right now. Its U.S. operations are far more profitable than non-union Toyota as we speak. It just paid its workers $5,000 profit-sharing checks. How do we reconcile that with the fact that unions are inherently uncompetitive? It's a tough moment right now.
I want to get our callers in here. Yes, Harley. Yes?
One very quick additional point. Hmm. If you look at the governors in New York and California, you're talking about tough issues, but at the bargaining table, working with unions to gain a solution. Well, you might say Jerry Brown and Andrew Cuomo are both Democrats. Look at the governor of Michigan, a conservative Republican. He has said he wants to work with unions. He wants to use collective bargaining to try to address these problems. Mm-mm. The issue in Wisconsin is not the budget crisis. It's getting rid of unions. It is an optimal moment to do that in the mind of the governor. But let's not confuse those two issues.
Nick in Norwich, Connecticut. Nick, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
It's very easy when you're talking about incredibly complicated social movements like this to get lost in the weeds. The basic fact of the matter is that for the past 30 years, the average American, 95% of us, have had at best stagnating and mostly declining influence and incomes. And this is because an incredibly powerful group of oligarchs who make billions of dollars, mostly the Koch brothers and Murdoch, have over the years created an infrastructure very detailed from the Texas School Board all the way up to national news. They've got their shills in the Supreme Court. They're changing the rules by which everything is looked at. And the bottom line is this is great for them, but it's incredibly bad for the rest of us.
Nick, let me pick it up right there, if I may. Diana first cut Roth, 30 years of declining influence and income for 95% of Americans, says our caller. He sees an oligarchy emerging here. We hear that message around this Wisconsin thing at the same time people trying to get budget deficits down.
Well, the caller is just mistaken. With the exception of these past recession years, incomes have been steadily rising. And
I haven't seen that except for a few years in the 90s.
Wages doubled after the Second World War, not because of union influence, but because the economy took off at the end of the war. These manufacturing jobs that have been union-dominated, America is losing competitiveness, and these jobs are going offshore.
What about ordinary Americans feeling disempowered, Diana?
Pardon?
What about ordinary Americans feeling disempowered?
Well, Americans feel disempowered right now because we haven't yet come out of the recession in terms of a recovery, and it's nothing to do with unions or non-unions. It's because we have regulations, including some unionization regulations, that are preventing businesses from creating jobs, such as the new healthcare law that any business with 51 or more workers is going to have to pay $2,000 per worker per year. We have laws such as that that are discouraging firms from hiring. Firms are creating jobs offshore. Multinational employment is rising outside the United States, but not within the United States. We need to make America a more business-friendly place so that employers create jobs.
Diana Firstcutt-Roth at the Hudson Institute in Washington, thanks for being with us. Harley Shaken, where do you see this going? Those thousands are still at that state capitol in Madison. Everybody's trying to figure this out. We do have real deep budget problems in this country, and unions have not been eager, understandably, to shed wages and benefits to help solve those.
Well, they've absolutely shown a willingness to do that in Wisconsin. This is an issue that has emerged as a broad issue capturing the feelings of many, I think, thousands of people in Wisconsin, perhaps millions of people nationally. It has galvanized the labor movement in a way that we haven't seen in many, many years, but it really goes well beyond labor. For me, it recalls the Reverend Martin Luther King on the last day of his life marched with sanitation workers in Memphis. What he said there was unions and dignity go together. In the midst of our problems today, we shouldn't forget that. They are part of, in fact, the cornerstone of a democratic society.
The whole country riveted on Madison and Wisconsin right now as that state struggles to find its way to an answer in this big standoff. Harley Shaken at the University of California, Berkeley, thank you very much for being with us today.
Always nice to be here.
Listeners, you can join the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Thanks for joining us today. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.